Welcome back to Voices from the Frontline, 90.7 in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. Right now we're being joined by John McAuliffe, who's the Executive Director for the Fund for Reconciliation and Development. It's a nonprofit organization based in New York. And John is widely acknowledged as an expert on the history of U.S. relationships with Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos. Their organization actually has been pretty instrumental in actually helping the Vietnamese people sue Dow Chemical this year recently in relation to the effects of Agent Orange, basically the damage that was done back then and continues to this day on the Vietnamese people. And now he's increasingly become active in issues in relation to U.S. and Cuba relations. And he's going to be talking to us now about how the organization is trying to move the candidates and representatives to end the blockade toward Cuba. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Pleasure to be with you.
All right. So why don't you start off by a lot of times when we talk along the left, a lot of people say there's no real difference between Bush and Kerry. And on this particular issue in terms of Cuba, there actually are some differences. So why don't you give us the three-minute rundown on remittances and what's going on between the two candidates, what the difference is.
Sure. I mean, it's hard to imagine a more dramatic difference. Basically, Bush has moved to eliminate every kind of travel that where the door had been opened in the Clinton administration. And I have to say that even the Clinton openings were limited compared to what they should be, but at least there were all kinds of groups like Global Exchange on the West Coast and others around the country sending people-to-people trips. There were many student exchange programs that existed, many religious delegations that were going, and virtually all of that has been eliminated now. What also has been very dumb politically for the Bush people is they eliminated or they cut down travel by Cuban Americans dramatically. They, in the past, Cuban Americans could visit their families theoretically once a year, but in fact they could go whenever they wanted to. Now they are limited to a specific license once every 3 years, which is a bureaucratic nightmare. It means they have to apply for permission to visit their family, and also it's now only their nuclear family. It's not aunts and uncles, nieces and nephews, the kinds of people that are important in any family, but especially important in Latin families. So what Bush has managed to do in basically paying off the hard right in the Cuban-American community that helped him get elected the first time is he's put at real risk his reelection the second time. Because so many Cuban Americans in Florida are upset about losing this and also finding they can't send money to family except their immediate nuclear family. The contrast with Kerry is pretty stark. I mean, Kerry has supported for years ending travel restrictions. He's voted with people in the Senate to end all travel restrictions. He's reaffirmed that. He's focused his campaign rhetoric on what he calls principled travel, which is the sort of people-to-people and educational exchange that he has presidential authority to establish on his own or reestablish on his own. The ending all travel restrictions will take an act of Congress, but it's clear that that congressional support is there, and Kerry is on record as saying that he supports that congressional attitude. So what we could see if Kerry is elected is two things happening. One is very quickly those sorts of programs that Global Exchange and others organized will start up again. And second, that by the late spring or summer, all travel restrictions will be ended and all remittance restrictions will be ended. So that's where, I mean, on those issues, travel and remittances, it couldn't be more dramatic. It's, from our view, as people who favor an end to all of the embargo and want normal relations between the U.S. and Cuba, it's a beginning, but it's a powerful beginning because the predictions. I think the predictions are a little inflated, but the American Society of Travel Agents has predicted that in the first year with no travel restrictions, there might be as many as 1 million American visits to Cuba.
John, also tell us about, haven't you just been writing about potential danger of escalated military attacks on Cuba if Bush is elected? Is that your view?
Well, I think that if Bush is elected, he's going to owe big time to the hardliners in Florida who were very impatient with him 9 months ago. One reason for this new harsher policy that may cost them the election is that they were feeling that he hadn't delivered on any of his promises 3 years before, and so they're going to be right back in his face should he be reelected, saying, okay, you got rid of Saddam Hussein, now let's see you get rid of Fidel Castro. So it's a situation in which they will be pushing against all rational interests for the United States, and for Cuba, they'll be pushing for a confrontation between the two countries.
John, why don't you tell us a little bit about the recent moves in terms of the legislature and the kind of pushback against what Bush has proposed?
Yeah. It's very interesting because for the last 2 or 3 years, there have been bipartisan majorities, both Republican and Democratic majorities in the House and Senate, to end travel restrictions. We came very close even to Congressman Rangel's amendment to end the embargo as a whole last year. The assumption going into the legislative session this year was that it would be very hard for Republicans to vote against the president simply on party loyalty grounds in a tightly contested presidential election, regardless of disagreements on particular issues, you rally around your party leader. So for that reason, in the House, they didn't bring up the travel issue again, but three other amendments were brought up. One was by Congressman Davis, a Democrat from Florida. These are amendments to the Treasury Appropriations Bill. His amendment was to prevent any use of the Treasury funding to restrict travel by Cuban Americans. That's a core element of Bush's policy. And that was adopted by 225 to 174, with not as many Republicans as last year, but a still substantial number. And then two California congresswomen, Maxine Waters and Barbara Lee, submitted other amendments. Waters' amendment was to eliminate restrictions on the financing for agricultural sales, so that the Cubans could, like any other country, get food on credit, and then you pay for the stuff you buy after you've sold it locally. And then Barbara Lee's amendment was to take off restrictions on educational exchange. The other side saw the handwriting on the wall and didn't even bring those to a voice vote. So those were, or to a recorded vote rather, those were both passed by a voice vote. So all three of those amendments go to a conference committee between the House and Senate. That will not come to the floor, obviously, until after the election when the Congress is back in session. What will be interesting is if Kerry is elected, whether, in fact, this language will for the first time stay in the conference report, or whether the Tom DeLay and the other Republican leaders will, as they have in the past, use their power to remove the language.
Well, with John McAuliffe of the Fund for Reconciliation and Development, John, let's go back to the vote. You are implying or you're intimating that you think there'll be significant slippage of Latino votes, Cuban Latino votes, for Kerry. Is this a logical argument, or do you have reason to...
It's also the polling data suggests it. There are a couple of factors working for us. One is that the number of registrations among Cubans who came to the U.S. in the 90s has increased as they've settled in and learned about the American political system, and it's become obvious how important it is to them. They've registered. They tend to be much more interested in being able to go home and visit their families and provide support than the earlier political leadership in the community, which was much more politically active in the past. Also, the polling data suggests it's not that suddenly Kerry is going to get a majority of the Cuban-American vote, but rather than Bush getting 80% of it, he probably will now get 65% of it. And given how close the election is in Florida, that 15% makes all the difference, especially with everything else going on this year. So it's not just wishful thinking. And the Kerry campaign recognizes that. They've put money into ads that people can listen by going to the Kerry website. Their ads in Spanish.
Yeah, they're in Spanish.
aimed at the Cuban community, and they're quite dramatic. So I think it's serious. It's not just rhetorical. Now, from our view, I think the campaign decided this was purely a local issue in Florida. They didn't raise it on a national level, although clearly the Bush position on Cuba is analogous to the sort of arrogance and go-it-alone attitude of the position on Iraq and ironically, like Iraq, built on the same kind of exile fantasies that U.S. policy was that led us to war there. I think it's a shame they didn't make it a national issue, but they didn't, and no doubt they had 1,000 focus groups telling them why not to, but from our view, it seemed like an issue that Kerry could have added to the indictment of Bush quite effectively.
So, John, we have about 3 minutes left, and I want to end with, you know, what can people do to help out and get involved? But before that, can you talk a little bit about, you were talking about Davis, who's a representative from Florida,
mm-hmm.
that actually brought this thing that basically was challenging what Bush was doing.
Right.
How has Bush tried to recoup from this? Like, what is he, or has he kind of just said, okay, 15% of the kind of community, the Cuban American vote, like, I can deal with that. That's not a problem.
Well, no, I think Bush has spent a lot of time in Florida. Though the last time he spoke to this issue that I could find on the White House website was in August. So I think they know they've hurt themselves on it. And there is this sort of story that's being put around that says, well, after the election, things will be relaxed again and people will be able to go. And some business people who disagree with Bush on Cuba but favor him for other issues have been saying, well, the embargo is going to be lifted whoever is elected in 18 months. And I think that's misleading. I think the reality is Bush is going to be deeply committed. Now, what people can do, two things. One is that there's lots of recruiting going on to get people into swing states, and I think that's very worth doing. Then people can do that through MoveOn.org or the Kerry websites. We've been circulating a petition that now has 2,200 signatures on it, which is in support of Kerry's position on travel and remittances. And people can find that by going to www.ipetitions.com/campaigns/Kerry Cuba Travel. Again, www.ipetitions.com/campaigns/Kerry Cuba Travel/ at the end. So that we've been circulating for the last month or so, and it continually grows, and I think it's an important vehicle both to express opinion now, but also to be able to say after Kerry is elected that there's a clear constituency that expects him to move on this issue directly and along the lines of what his campaign statements have been.
Thanks, John. This is Eric Mann at Voices from the Frontline. We're going to take a quick break. This was John McCullough, and he's with the Fund for Reconciliation and Development. John, we want to get you back on a future show to talk about Vietnam.
I'd love to.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for the work that you guys do.
Okay. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back on KPFK 90.7 FM. And I got to get the Santa Barbara one. 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. It's that